going forever. Moments go, time runs out. And then it hits you with pain. Things are great on the way out.
Back to the Gods to Ghosts Volleyball Podcast, and your host, Scott Bemke, for our third and final part of our interview with Andy Fishburn. In addition to Andy's Hall of Fame career competing professionally on the beach, a little known fact is that he competed collegiately during his freshman and sophomore years in 74 and 75 for the Yale Bulldogs, including leading the team to a 31-3 conference record and ultimately winning the conference championship that year and earning an invitation to the NCAA Men's Final Four Championship held at Pauley Pavilion at UCLA. Later on, in 2020, Andy was inducted into what is now known as the Eastern Intercollegiate Volleyball Association Hall of Fame for his accomplishments while competing for Yale during those two seasons in 74 and 75. With that being said, let's get started with the conclusion in part three of Andy Fishburn.
Diggers, were there specific players out on that court that sometimes would make digs that you go, gosh, these guys are just next level? And what made,
well, you have to delineate a little bit. Now, there was the whole era of volleyball changed when people started blocking in the late 70s. So the block made a big difference as far as the dig is concerned, obviously, because it took away a big part of the court so the digger could be more effective. But I saw some matches before blocking became in, like in the 70s, mid-70s, mainly when Mingus was playing with Greg Lee, for example. Jim Mingus had an uncanny ability to dig a ball. I think he was probably the strongest digger I'd ever seen. And most of that was because there wasn't a block. This is when he played without a block up. He could dig a ball as well as anybody without a block. Sinjin was a good digger, but he had the advantage of either a Karch or a Stokos blocking. Those are big guys. And you can line up a dig pretty well, but Sinjin had a definite good affinity for digging. Mingus did. John Stevenson did. He also played behind Dodd, for example. Dodd and Stevenson were a formidable team. Dodd put up a big block, and you know, you could line up the dig pretty well. So those were some of the guys. There were a lot of diggers that there was a guy named Jeff Southcott who was a good friend of mine who played at State Beach. He was a very good digger, very quick all around there. Yeah, and Matt Gage is another one that sticks in my mind. He had such good form, and he had an uncanny ability, like Mingus did, and they played together a lot, to line up and not only dig it, but dig it with accuracy. It's one thing to dig a ball that someone hits really hard, and you pop it up, and it's, whoa, what a great dig. It's another thing to control that dig.
Right.
And keep it in play and make it happen that way.
That's it.
They were all good.
It's interesting you mentioned that. I know, like, around 80 or so, Mingus and Gage played together for a while, and they battled against Karch and Sinjin, and Gage really loved playing with Mingus because their ball control was impeccable, and Gage was a little, you know, they were both getting a little bit older at that time.
Right.
And Gage had, you know, was recovered from Reiter's syndrome in his knees, and he maybe couldn't get up and hit the ball as hard as he could. I heard he was a hell of a hitter still then, but even more so before that. But that they could dig balls, like, you know, so they would get into a rhythm sometimes where they would dig balls, hard-driven balls. He and Mingus, like, they were taking easy serves from passes, from what I've heard from fans that watch them play, and that's pretty damn impressive. I would have loved to have seen two of phenomenal diggers like that, just digging guys off the court.
Digging off the court and also converting. You know, the combination, it's one of the great things in volleyball to watch is the great dig and then a beautiful set and then a conversion for a point.
Yeah, that's what I miss the most about the sport now with how it is that you don't see that nearly as much. You see a huge roof, but you don't see a great dig and then
My biggest complaint about the game these days is it's too much about blocking. The exciting part of the game is defense and rallies. I always was a fan of, or a proponent of, raising the net, because raising the net, you had a lot more defense, and you'd have rallies that would go on and on and on, perhaps, like make it 8-6, for example. We tried that at the Beach Club, and it was pretty effective, because the angle of incidence of the hit is not as extreme, and you could dig easier, and you'd think that the short guy would be left out of it, but he's not, because he moves the ball faster and he develops shots. The last thing I want to watch is some giant block and just that's the end of the rally.
Exactly. That's exactly how I feel about it when it changed. I don't hold anything against the players. They got to play by because that's what the rules are, but
right.
It's like, well, if you just have to stand there and jump 6 inches and you know, you're 3 feet over the net because you're already 6'9",
yeah,
in the court smaller and the guys have less room to work with hitting, you know, it takes your shots away, it's like hitting right. In a phone booth. I mean, it's right. Just not the same deal, but I don't want to get go off on a tangent on that. I'll be here all day. I wanted to, you know, when I asked Mingus, I heard he was one of the best overhand diggers, and he was a damn good football player at Santa Monica High School for Don Steer. Uh-huh. And I think he was a talented defensive back, and I always asked him, like, what was the key to being a good overhand digger? And he would line up on the ball, but he said he pretended like he was catching a pass or, you know, in football, and that was what he was doing. So I wish I would have learned that or known that when I was still able to play. Was that what is like for you too when you'd overhand dig?
Yeah,
were your hands straight up, or were they like you're catching a pass where they're, you know, I'm just curious what the key was to that.
Yeah, I think one of my strengths was digging overhead. And what you do is you have your hands as almost like an open set, not far enough apart where the ball's going to go through, but you need strong hands to do it, first of all. And what I found effective was I would actually attack the hit. So, you know, if you dig a ball, you're always back and retrieving it. When you take it overhand, you can actually go towards the ball with your legs and take the hit away. So some of it's just timing, some of it's strategy, but you needed a strong hand, and the ball would, you'd be quick enough where you could envelop the ball with your hands and make a very controlled dig.
So it was almost like you were setting the ball that's coming at you at 80 miles
yes.
an hour, and then
yes.
you have to have the strong thumbs and
right.
Fingers to get it up. And that's right. Interesting now that you mentioned that. That's what Mingus said, too, when he was on defense. He was attacking the ball. He wasn't waiting
yeah.
for it. He was walking into it.
Exactly.
Huh. Well, there you heard it there, folks, from Fishburne and Mingus. If you want to overhand dig, attack the ball and make sure you have strong hands.
Yeah.
You got to have some stones, too, between your legs, especially when a guy like Spies or Stokos or Shamalis, you know, are unloading on a ball. I mean, were there ever some occasions after that one you took to the forehead from Shamalis? You said, maybe I'll stop doing this against him moving forward. I'm not seeing straight for like a day and you got a concussion.
There used to be a tournament at Lake Tahoe, which was really a fun tournament that guys would go to. And in the finals, I was playing with, I was playing with Fred Sturm, I believe. And we were playing against Mingus and Lee. And we were kind of on fire in the finals. And I got a set, and I hit a ball that went pretty near straight down. And Greg Lee was there with his hands up to dig it overhand. And he wishes he had his hands down because the ball bounced off the sand and hit him right in the sack. And he was out. He was out. That was it. Right in the Lee family jewels.
Well, I think he was able to have children later on in life, so he came out of it unscathed, but I'm sure for a few minutes that day he was a little concerned.
We didn't call the match. We played a few more points, but he was through.
he had a big bag of ice on his lap the rest of the evening and a few of those Coors Banquet beers.
Yeah, that's right. The face ball is another thing. People would get face ball if they weren't quick to getting their hands up to dig it overhand. They always relied on the dig. If you have a really hard hitter, the guy can hit it hard enough, he can hit you right in the face. Yeah. That would happen occasionally. Not with most of the good guys, but the face ball was a treat.
Right, yeah, six-packed or whatever. Yeah. I heard Hooper was a pretty good defender, and when I asked him, he said he just didn't care where he got hit with the ball. It could hit him anywhere, and then he'd scoop it up and walking into it. So I think you got to have a certain kind of mentality when you're playing out there.
Yeah, Hooper was good with putting his arms out and creating a big space where the ball could kind of ricochet off and pop up. And he would attack, like we said before, he would attack the ball on defense. And odds were that if he touched it, it would bank around in his chest and his arm and pop up. And he was good at that.
Yeah, it's an uncanny thing, to put it mildly. So we got through the best hitters, best diggers. Now, if you look back on your career, who were the three best teams you ever competed with or against on the beach?
I would say we played St. John and Randy Stokelis a lot. Dane and I did. And they won most of the time. We beat them occasionally, but they won most of the time. They were a very good all-around team. We tried to serve Randy, hoping that he would have a mental lapse or something, but he developed to be a very strong mental player. St. John had a strong mental game. So they were tough. We actually played Mingus and Gage quite a bit when I was playing with Fred Sturm. And we were pretty even with them. We had a lot of long. They were a good all-around team. Not a lot of holes. Occasionally Gage would get tired and we'd prey on him a little bit. But good matches with them. They were a really, really good team. Karch, whoever he played with, made a good team. He was so strong as a partner to whoever he played with that I'm not sure, we didn't have a lot of experience playing against Karch because he'd play in Europe and he was here and there and everywhere. But he played with St. John sometimes and we had a tough time against them. I guess that's pretty much it. No, they were beatable, but they were tough.
We mentioned Hooper earlier, and this makes me circle back about the lifestyle back then. From what I've heard, Hooper, OB, and a guy by the name of Craig Freeberg knew how to have a pretty damn good time off the court. So, which one of those guys was the biggest partier?
I would say you have accurate information there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. I use Bob Vogelsang as my source in fact check because he's always right. You know that.
Yeah, I think the sport did have, what was required was something to help the endurance. And if there are some uppers or something like that that would help the endurance and make people last longer and have more energy, that was what was desired. It wasn't like smoking pot and you're all, loosey-goosey on the court because you need something to pump you up. But I don't think it was that common in the sport of beach volleyball as compared to some other sports. But it was definitely around.
Right, I would imagine in the back of some of those vans down there at the parking lots and whatnot. So, rumor has it that you were a pretty sharp guy. You started out in college, maybe at Yale, and then moved on to Stanford, and then went on to have a really successful career in finance. I think like your family, from what I've heard, and then had to balance working with playing on the weekends, which is tough to do.
Yeah.
So let's hear about are those rumors true there, Fish?
Well, I kind of, academics was always important to my family. My mother went to Stanford and my dad went to the Naval Academy and, they wanted to make sure I had a good college education and to spur on to a good career. my dad was always upset with the fact that here I graduated from Stanford and I'm playing beach volleyball. He goes, what kind of a deal is that?
Sounds like Von Hagen's father.
Probably. So, I again, it was a pretty sheltered life, but I went through Stanford, and I actually went to Yale for 2 years. The ironic thing about Yale was we had a pretty good indoor team. In the year 1975, Yale was asked to participate in the Final Four, which was unheard of because we were a club sport at the time. And the head guy at Yale said, the head guy, I mean, his name was Kingman Brewster. What a great name. Kingman
Perfect.
Brewster.
That's a Yale name if I've ever heard one.
Yes. He said he made a deal with us that if we made the Final Four, we could get varsity status in volleyball for the first time in history at Yale. And that year they happened to pick an at-large team from the East Coast, and we had won the big East Coast tournament. We were invited to the Final Four at Pauley Pavilion at UCLA. And for Yale, that was the most unbelievable deal. And here I was in the middle of 10,000 people playing with the Yale Bulldogs against some of the best volleyball teams ever at UCSB and UCLA. But the fact we were there was just phenomenal. And I actually have a Yale varsity letter in volleyball.
That's pretty cool.
It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I didn't know that you played there, so I'm glad I asked. Now, be truthful here. Is it true you got tapped on the shoulder to join the Skull and Bones Secret Society, Andy?
No, that's not true.
I'm just kidding. I always find that kind of fascinating about that stuff.
I know a couple guys that did. I was there for 2 years. I was freaking out about – I was such a California boy that, you know, I was talking to going to Ivy League, and I had good test scores and all that kind of stuff. So I went to Yale for 2 years, and Yale academically was just phenomenal. I mean, you go to classes and there'd be a standing ovation for the professor. You have a guy, you'd be studying some subject and you realize that the guy that was teaching you was the guy who actually wrote the textbook.
Right.
Huh. It's just a phenomenal academic experience. But I was freaking out after a couple of years because I knew I wanted to live in California and I was really a California boy. And I was scared to death of being groomed and going into New York City and building a career there. So designed a letter to Stanford saying why I wanted to go and why I wanted to leave Yale. And I got in on the transfer, and it was like a huge sigh of relief because there's so much pressure. Should I stay at Yale? Should I leave? So academically, I was kind of groomed for all this as I was going through high school. And finally, ultimately, Stanford was a nice balance for us because it had a lot of great sports. Clearly, Stanford's been a great sports school. Although there's some weird things happening recently about their cutting 11 of the top sports.
Yeah, that was really disheartening when I saw that they got rid of the men's volleyball program. That was unbelievable.
I can't tell you how disappointing that is. There's a lot of guys who are very upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys that were donors are taking their donations back because that was a really big part of who Stanford was. And
absolutely.
Is.
Yeah, they've won. I mean, Don Shaw had a tremendous amount of success with the women's program there, and I think he was a coach for the men's program along with Sturm, and then those guys also. Stanford is, you know, won a bunch of titles there too over the years on the men's side too. So
there's a movement. There's a movement trying to get that changed. I don't think it will, but it was just very, very sad, especially for those volleyball fanatics, which most of us were.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, when you start talking about prize money on the volleyball tour, it's not, when you want to start a family, which I was ready to start a family, it just wasn't adequate to build a career in volleyball. I mean, a couple of years I was the top money winner, and, you know, maybe $40,000 for the season was what I make. That just wouldn't fly in the real world. So I had to make a break from the tour, which I finally did in 1985 after playing for plus or minus 10 years on the tour. And through some good relationships, et cetera, I was offered a job at a commercial real estate developer, high-rise office developer downtown LA called McGuire Thomas Partners. And I built a career there leasing high-rise office space, specializing in leasing high-rise office space for 30 years. Downtown LA. And then that kind of came to a close about 3 or 4 years ago and afforded a retirement.
There you go. You put that work ethic your parents instilled into you as a kid there with your 4 hours of chores and reading and homework as a kid to good use ultimately, aside from building traps to catch.
Yeah, I'll always be grateful for the time of volleyball, though. A lot of people said, you're screwing up. Why are you playing volleyball? You know, you're close to Stanford and you got a nice degree and you should be getting an MBA or going through some business alternatives. And I knew I loved the game. I knew I would always regret it if I didn't at least make a go of it. It's such a great game, you know, diving in the sand. I also was going to mention that we kind of invented the game of volus. Has anyone talked to you about volus?
I've heard about it. So, yeah, why don't you give define it for me here so I don't stumble all over my words and screw up like I do everything else.
Volus is a really simple game. It's a combination of tennis and volleyball. You play on a volleyball court with a standard volleyball, and you serve it underhand, and you bump it back and forth. You have one hit on each side of the net, so you bump it back, and you try to put it away against it. You play on a full court, so there's a lot of room to put it away, and you're a lot of running around, and it's a tremendous workout. So, and you're not allowed to shoot the ball with your hands over the net. You have to bump it back over or hit it with one hand like a spike. But you couldn't shoot it because it'd be too easy to put it away. So we invented a bunch of guys started playing volleys as a way to get in shape. And I guarantee you it does. I just thought I'd throw that out.
Now, in terms of, looking back on your career, what are you most proud of? How would you like to be remembered? And what do you miss most about those days, Andy?
Well, that's a loaded question. I would say the first part, which is how I'd like to be remembered, is as a strong all-around player with a very good mental game and the ability to win, but also as an innovator in the sport who would make shots for whatever presented itself, an innovator in how to play the game, how to be a better player, but also as a good sport, as a good competitor, strong competitor, but as a strong game. I've played a lot of sports. I'm just a sports fanatic ever since I was born. So I think there's a lot of competitiveness in my blood.
Mm-hmm.
But I think being a very good competitor.
You learned your lessons from when you were a kid and throwing your racket and hitting the ground all the time.
Yeah, of course. That was not the thing to do.
I think we all had our moments like that, so you channeled it the right way ultimately, so that's great. And what do you miss most about playing and the times that you guys had and, you know, just that lifestyle?
I think what I miss the most is just that fabulous atmosphere that was at State Beach. That was just a unique thing. I don't even go to the beach to play volleyball anymore. It doesn't seem like it. It's just dead, a lot of these beaches. It was such a pinnacle of enthusiasm for a pastime. The sport of beach volleyball attracted so many people, and it attracted some derelicts too. But it's a beautiful sport, and I miss kind of that carefree California lifestyle. It'd be hard to recreate.
Absolutely. Now, are there any particular songs from that time period or bands that when they come on the radio and you're driving in the car and it just takes you back to one of those State Beach days or a tournament like, for example, when I hear like Don Henley's Boys of Summer, it just makes me think of that going back to that sport and that time in 84. But for you, are there any particular songs or bands that take you back to that, Andy?
Oh, there's the Beach Boys, obviously, and there's the Allman Brothers. There's a number of different bands. I will say that a lot of it is just the fact that something that was so wonderful that it's just not around anymore. It was kind of a unique time period for a sport. Volleyball was in the 70s and 80s, and I get almost cheerful sometimes that I'm so grateful that I was able to experience it.
You sure did, and that was, by all accounts, when it was really something special. It still had a lot of that purity to it, where it was played for pride and love of the game and bragging rights, and then, you know, you also had the sponsorships and the media and the everything else that was coming into it, so it was something else.
Pretty special, really special, and I will never agree with somebody who said you should have gone right to work.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trade it for anything.
I believe it. Now, before I let you go here, you know, you were oftentimes, you know, with all the success that you had, what are you up to nowadays in terms of where do you live? You have any family, and what kind of hobbies do you have nowadays, Fish?
Well, I would say that I mentioned when I first started talking about the long history with Los Angeles on both sides of the family.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing I've had to do in a long time, my father's 94, and I'm helping take care of him. He lives in Sonoma County. And my wife and I moved up here partly to help him out and partly because L.A. has just gotten too damn crowded.
Yep.
It's just not the way it used to be. And leaving it wasn't that hard to do. It was hard to leave the beach club, but I can always go back there. That's not, you know, a visit or whatever. But it's sort of a major move. I mean, I've lived in L.A. for 60-plus years, and here I am in Sonoma. It's a beautiful place. We have some land. We've got a nice house and fabulous food and wine and outdoorsy and coastline and all that. It's a fabulous place to live. So that's where we are now. I have two kids that are live nearby, one in Mill Valley and one near Mill Valley on the North Bay of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife is a quilter. She's an avid quilter. She makes these beautiful quilts and shares them with her family. It's just the two of us up here, and we have friends that come and visit from L.A. So it's I guess you'd call it kind of a retirement play. I'm never sure if I'm truly retired or not, but it's...
How nice. Yeah, I've heard it's nice up there. I haven't been there, but I've heard good things.
We've had some tough fire. We've had fires and floods and all kinds of horrific stuff, but we've lasted through it nicely, and the real estate's great, and it's a great place to live.
Outstanding. Now, for my final question here, Fish, how many times throughout the course of your career have you had people come up to you and ask you for your autograph when they thought you were Robert Redford?
Well, I'll tell you, one experience that I'll share, which is kind of crazy. The year, I think, was like 1985 or 86, and I had kind of stopped playing volleyball, and my new employer, McGuire Thomas, made me sign a sheet that I wouldn't play volleyball anymore because they didn't want me to
lose you.
Yeah. So Dusty Dvorak, who arguably is one of the great setters of all time, mm-hmm. called me one time. Why don't you join me for this California Beach Festival in Japan? We'll play in this tournament. And there were a bunch of us. Mingus was there and Hooper was there. Actually, Mingus played with Hooper. And I played with Dusty Dvorak. It was the most beautiful setting hands I've ever seen. The reason I bring it up was when we got off the plane, he had won the gold medal in the 84 Olympics. Or 84 Olympics. I think it was 84.
Yeah, it was in L.A. there, sure.
In L.A. And we had won the world championships. We got off the plane, and I'm not kidding, there were about 200 girls. Dark-haired Japanese girls that had T-shirts on, and we walked by, and they would bend over and give us a pen, and we'd sign our name on their back. And it took about an hour, almost 2 hours, to sign everybody's.
Wow,
that was kind of wild.
You felt like the Beatles or Beach Boys or something going over there.
They had this whole beach festival, which was fantastic. And I had a tape of the whole thing, and my wife unfortunately accidentally destroyed it. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, okay, Fish. This was outstanding. I almost 2 hours of great stuff. I have to give a shout out to the Condor, Dennis. Dennis Dugan, pardon me, for putting me in touch with you. And this was a really great interview. You're a lot of fun to talk to. It reminded me of when I had the pleasure of speaking with Shamalis. It's like almost like you've known the person for a while. It always makes it much easier. So done, man. You knocked it out of the park.
This wraps up our three-part interview with Andy Fishburne. I hope you enjoyed it. Before I let you go, I'd like to give special thanks to Dennis the Condor Dugan for getting me in touch with Andy, and this interview wouldn't happen without his help. I'd also like to give a special thank you to Frank Taylor, who is a member at the Santa Monica Beach Club with Andy and gave me some great insight on questions to ask. In addition to that, Matt Gage and Dane Selznick were instrumental with those questions as well to make sure the interview ran smoothly, which is debatable when it comes to me and my interviewing skills. But Andy was top notch, like he is at everything else he does in life. Thanks for listening. Take care.